Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group. And every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated. Good afternoon. I'm Amy Bell. You're listening to Every Woman. And today we have what's become a yearly event for us, where we're going to talk about toys and gender with Emily Jones, who is a doctoral student at KU in sociology, and Sharon Lockhart's here, and Ebony Johnson, who has been interning with us, is going to join in on the conversation, and Beth Wilkinson. I don't know who Mary Wilkinson is. Beth Wilkinson is also here with us, but first we are going to go to Women's E-News.
The House passed legislation to sharply tighten the screening of refugees from Syria and Iraq into the United States, The Washington Post reported November 19th. President Barack Obama threatened to veto the plan, and the White House has said the bill will not improve U.S. security following the November 13th Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant attacks on Paris. The National Domestic Workers Alliance urged Americans to call Congress to voice their support for Syrian refugees. Men and women across the globe will not receive equal salaries until 2133, based on current trends, according to the World Economic Forum Global Gender Gap Report, Time reported November 19th. The WEF report compared the status of men and women in each nation in terms of health, economic participation, political empowerment, and education. There are almost 250 million more women in the global workforce today than 10 years ago, says the report. Yet they are currently paid what men earned in 2006. Both students and teachers believe boys are more interested and capable than girls when it comes to learning computer science, according to a study by Gallup and Google, NBC News reported November 17th. When teachers were asked who they think is more interested in learning computer science, 63% of them said boys and only 4% said girls. Less girls than boys in 7th to 12th grade said they were confident they could learn computer science. Between 100,000 and 240,000 Texas women between the ages of 18 and 49 have tried to end a pregnancy by themselves, The Atlantic reported November 17th. Citing two surveys by the Texas Policy Evaluation, the report said 1.7% of women surveyed said they had performed an abortion themselves, while 4.1% said their best friend had or suspected she had. The powerful Service Employees International Union has endorsed Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton for president, Politico reported November 17th. Hillary Clinton has proven she will fight, deliver, and win for working families, said SEIU President Mary Kay Henry. The union, which boasts of 2 million members, made the endorsement through a vote by its executive board. SEIU was the union behind the fast food workers' wage movement. The reported cases of chlamydia in the United States rose to more than 1.4 million, or 456 cases per 100,000, in 2014, the highest number of annual cases of any condition ever reported to the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Associated Press reported November 17th. Aside from chlamydia, government officials said gonorrhea cases in 2014 were also up by 5%, while the most contagious forms of syphilis jumped 15% compared to the previous year. Sexually transmitted diseases are among the more than 70 diseases that are reportable to the CDC. The Canadian government will be launching a national inquiry into the country's missing and murdered Indigenous women by the summer, The Globe and Mail reported November 16th. The announcement came a month after newly elected Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said his government would move forward quickly with a federal probe on the issue. At least 1,181 Indigenous women disappeared or were killed between 1980 and 2012, based on a 2014 report by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Hundreds of women in Rio de Janeiro stripped off to protest rape and violence in Brazil, the Daily Mirror reported November 16th. Dubbed the Slut Walk, the event was meant to address claims that women provoke attacks by the way they dress or act. The protesters also called out newly proposed abortion restrictions, which would prevent a raped woman from undergoing the procedure unless she can prove that a crime occurred. The White House has pledged more than $100 million toward the economic prosperity of girls and women of color, Yahoo News reported November 16th. The five-year funding initiative, which was announced last Friday, will allocate $100 million to low-income women and $18 million for the continuation of research on the living condition of girls and women of color. A mass grave supposedly containing the remains of around 80 murdered women has been discovered near the Iraqi town of Sinjar, BBC reported November 16th. The town, where there were reports of brutality and mass executions against members of the minority Yazidi community, was previously under the control of Islamic State forces until it was liberated last week. Almost half of Japanese female employees reported being subjected to maternity harassment after they became pregnant, Quartz reported November 15th. Citing a labor ministry survey, it said 47.3% were told they were causing trouble or should retire, while the others were not renewed, dismissed, or didn't get fair bonuses. The Supreme Court announced November 13th that it will hear a challenge to key parts of Texas's 2013 abortion law that pro-abortion rights groups say is one of the strictest in the nation, CNN reported. The court has not heard a major abortion case since 2007, and its decision will likely come down sometime next spring or early summer in the heat of the presidential campaign. If the justices uphold the lower court's decision and allow two provisions of the law to go into effect, the number of available clinics in the state is expected to fall to about 10. A Utah judge has put a hold on his order to remove a foster child from the home of a married lesbian couple, whom he said were unfit to keep the girl because of their sexual orientation, The Washington Post reported November 13th. Judge Scott N. Johansson struck language from his original order, requiring that the 9-month-old be removed from the home within a week in favor of a heterosexual foster adoptive placement. He has set a hearing for December 4th to determine the best interest of the child. His original decision spurred outrage on Twitter from organizations, celebrities, and politicians, with Hillary Clinton tweeting, "Being a good parent has nothing to do with sexual orientation. Thousands of families proves that." More than 1,700 people who sought shelter to escape violence in central Indiana didn't receive it, according to a report by the Domestic Violence Network released November 12th. Indy Star reported November 12th. The network found that 1,743 people were denied shelter between July 1, 2013 and June 30, 2014, a number that nearly tripled from the year before. Agencies reported being over capacity and didn't have available beds. Maternal mortality has fallen by 44% since 1990, according to a November 12 press release by several United Nations agencies and the World Bank Group. Maternal deaths around the world dropped from about 532,000 in 1990 to 303,000 this year, lowering the maternal mortality rate to 216 maternal deaths per 100,000 live births. More than 100 women are suing the drug company Qualitas Pharmaceuticals for a birth control packaging error they say resulted in unplanned pregnancies, CBS News reports November 12. The women say the company and its manufacturers distributed defective birth control pills back in 2011, causing 113 accidental pregnancies across 26 states.
And we are back. And I just wanted to tell you all that our call-in number today is 816-931-5534. And we do want to get you involved in the conversation today because it is a strangely important one. Honestly, the first thing I want to ask is why? Why are toys important?
Okay, you're asking me?
I am totally asking you. Emily, this is Emily Jones. Hello. And she is a sociologist at KU, and she's going to tell us why toys are important.
Okay, so I think you're right. That's a really good place to start the conversation. And I think people don't realize, I think a lot of times people think toys are pretty innocuous and they don't really have a lot to do with bigger things. And so they don't get a lot of attention. But if you do think about it, toys, when you give kids toys, you're really giving them tools to practice life with, right? So when you give boys certain toys or girls certain toys, you're giving them messages about what's appropriate for their life and their activity and what they are to practice. Mm-hmm. And I've said this before on the show, but one of the ways I was taught when I was a first grad student by an older grad student, it's such a great picture on how to understand this, is that I ask my students, you know, first I say, okay, folks who, when you were a little girl, what kind of toys were you given to play with? And what?
Barbie dolls.
Barbie dolls.
Easy Bake Oven.
Easy Bake Oven.
Oh, yeah.
What else? I'll just do this with you guys. What else?
Well, I think it was Barbie dolls. And then maybe some music things.
Music
perhaps.
Things.
Like,
okay.
I remember having some sort of a recording device and things.
Oh, like a tape player?
Yeah, I had a karaoke machine. And,
Yeah.
Yeah, dolls. I think I wanted pretty dolls and, what else? Dress-up clothes.
Yeah. Dress-up clothes.
Okay.
Cooking.
Yeah, like cooking sets. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, here we've been saying what kind of toys we wanted or that we were given. And when you look at what those things practice, so we practiced the way we looked. We practiced caretaking, cooking for others or maybe caring for little baby dolls. We practiced... What else? Cooking, baking, mostly caretaking and how we look. And then some music, you know. A lot of people have that. Like Amy, your son, has music.
So
that's
music
like gender
is...
neutral. Mm-hmm. But if you asked a little boy what they were given or what they wanted, they wouldn't probably say baby dolls or cooking or dress-up clothes, right?
Right.
Okay. So then I always ask my students, my male students, I say... You know, what did you want to play with, or what did you play with, or what were you given? And they say, you know, Nerf guns, Army.
G.I. Joes,
action figures.
Action heroes, yeah. And heroic things.
A lot of sports. And yeah, so in sociology, we always say, yeah, girls play sports too. And there are some boys who probably play baby dolls or whatever, but the typical that you usually see is kind of demarcated by gender, where girls... do this and boys do this. And so we could stop there and be like, okay, what's the big deal? It's not really a big deal if you think about it. But the way I was taught to think about this and the way I try to teach my students is I say, okay, So while you were using those toys, if you think about it, what does a kid do but just, like, go to school and play? Like, that's their job, is just to play. So they spend a lot of hours practicing whatever they're doing. So if they've got baby dolls, they're practicing taking care of baby dolls, right? Or whatever they...
Mothering skills.
Yeah, so, and vice versa, like, whatever the boys are doing, they're practicing. So I ask the students, and I say, well, okay, what were you doing when you played with those toys? And we go through that. And then I say, what were you learning while you were doing that? And they kind of, scratch their head a little bit. And I'm like, okay, so while you were playing dress up and putting on the clothes, and I always say, who are you pretending to be? They said, oh, mommy or a princess, right? They weren't pretending to be president of the United States.
Right.
They weren't pretending to be, I don't know, a cab driver. They had very specific things that they were pretending to be. And so, little boys probably didn't dress up to play mommy, and some of them did, and they might have been told not to do that. So they practice being through toys. Whatever we practice for a long time, we get really good at. And so my point with toy and gender socialization is that when you give a child a toy, no matter what it is, you're ultimately giving that message to that child that this is something that's important and proper, and you're saying this is something that is good for you to do. And then you're giving them that with the understanding that they're going to practice and become better at that. So then fast forward to when someone's 18, 19, 20, and for the rest of their lives, and you start to say, oh, well, look at this woman, and she's so good at taking care of babies. She's such a good babysitter. But in reality, she just practiced that in her brain for a really long time, and society, like, pitched in on that idea. When in the meantime, there's tons of men who are really caring fathers, And so saying that someone is has an innate trait is not quite as simple as that. It's that we all have the ability to practice traits, but that we seem to just...
let nurturing be something that women practice since childhood.
And we police and little boys when they do.
Right. Are you saying, perhaps, that is gender learned? I mean, gender patterns learned.
Oh, absolutely.
Rather than born,
What
you're saying.
That's exactly what
so
I'm saying.
So we could educate boys to be nurturing.
And I would argue that they absolutely are to begin with.
They are to begin with.
I think that's something that people are drawn to each other and drawn to caring for each other. And we might, I don't want to say as crass as beat it out of boys, but we do funnel them away from that.
You know, Bob Minor was just in here as a guest on 10th Voice, and we were talking before he left. I was hoping he'd be listening and maybe call in. He's a sociologist and retired from KU, religious studies, I believe. And he had some interesting things to talk about, how we give the boys guns and make them soldiers, and then soldiers get killed and die young. So, in other words, we're killing off our little boys
early.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was an interesting analogy.
No, that's a really important thing to say.
I do. I have a niece and nephew, and my nephew is 7 and my niece is 3. And in the context of the words we use, I would say my nephew is a bit more feminine and my niece is a bit more masculine, if you will, even though, he's the boy and she's the girl.
Right,
and
right.
My nephew loves to be in the kitchen with my mother and, and he loves dancing and music and maybe some things that we would associate with girls. And so that's an interesting conversation in our houses, in our family. My niece, even as 3, I mean, she's more, she'll put her dukes up, and kind of want to fight. And, I don't certain things she wants to do that it... I think it is where, like you said, we're just certain things I think are in all of us. We kind of start contributing to, you should be more this way because you are a boy.
And he's also going to get messages at school. So there's going to be messages in the family for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of families are pretty loving and try their best to nurture kids in the way that makes them more healthy and whole. But... he's going to go to school and, he's going to be watching TV and see, boys aren't doing that on TV. Yeah. Or maybe if they are, they're called names. And, culture is changing for sure.
But there still are those kids who will say, you're a sissy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that generation, we had like...
Who's this?
This is my generation, like 70s, growing up in the 70s. We had like whether we wanted to be inside or outside.
Oh,
and that was like
yeah.
the big kind of, well, if you're inside, you're more feminine.
Oh, really?
If you're outside, you wanted to play.
Yeah.
You know, and not with just toys.
So,
you wanted to be out.
So were you a tomboy if you played outside?
Yeah. You
Sharon,
really were.
Sharon, were you a tomboy when you wanted to play outside?
Well, I was the oldest girl in a family of four girls, and I don't recall tomboy. My mother was a remarkable woman. She could work on gasoline engines and do anything a man could do, much to my father's chagrin. He did come to terms with that and relied on her a great deal. So I didn't learn that little girls and little boys were supposed to be different. In fact, I had to get married before I learned a lot of things about the differences between families, how families were raised. Mm-hmm. It was just shocking to me. And I was given toy guns and cowboy boots, and my father, I was probably supposed to be a boy, you know, which I didn't even learn that for a long time, and it never bothered me too much.
Sharon, you're talking about something that reminds me. Did you have a lot of TV in your house?
We didn't have TV until, God, how old was I? A long time, because I was... Ooh, let me think. At least 12, 13, maybe older before there was TV.
Yeah, this something I was talking about with before we started the show is we were talking about representation in the media and in toys and how that can really that can steer you into knowing what's right and you know what's proper for someone to do. So I was specifically talking about, you know, for gender, so my daughter recently asked, we've been talking about this for a while, but my daughter recently asked my husband why there weren't any girl stormtroopers. And then all the Star Wars people quickly told me about clones, and I still don't really get what that means, but something about, and I don't really understand all of that, but I thought it was interesting that she noticed the absence of her own representation of herself. And so you had some really interesting things to say about that.
Yeah. And I didn't realize until I think at some point where as a woman of color, where I was not seeing myself, you know, on TV or in a lot of different roles or
and toys,
or just whatever it is. And I start to realize, well, where were we? Like, were we just not? I mean, I know we had to be around, you know what I mean?
Oh, you were around.
Right? It's like we didn't just come drop on the plane. But, I mean, where were we? Mm-hmm. And I think to a point we were talking about earlier is you kind of learn self-hatred or to, like, maybe I'm not a person to be seen or,
exactly.
you know, and then we started not liking the way we were being seen.
Exactly.
And not to say that that wasn't, to some extent, what was actually going on, but that there is obviously a lot more to us than just what was being shown.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, I had one black Barbie.
I didn't know.
I had one.
I didn't really have a lot of Barbies, though.
And she was a figure skater.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm thinking is interesting within the context right now because they're not accepted in these kind of dainty, like they're too beefy for ballet and Misty Copeland.
That's actually an inspiring story for me as a woman of color, seeing Misty Copeland, her talk about her body and, you know, just her take and the way that she's built, which obviously for more women of color, just the more curves or, you know, or just different ways that we are.
Even white women are more than just ballerina size.
That's the funniest thing, but
I think we have
a caller.
Bob Miner called just to tell us he was in fact listening, and that
he
didn't want to ask anything, but it was some very good points there.
Should he want to call in, he will call back, I'm sure.
But I do think that that's an interesting part of socialization too. I mean, because was the fact that I had a black Barbie, did that help me be less of a racist white person? Or
I doubt it because
one.
It's showing that there's one and it's not typical or the norm. So that's another thing about girls, too, with girls' toys. So you're something special, as in a tomboy, if you do the same things that boys are expected to do. And then when boys do things that women or little girls are expected to do, there's something else that we have to put a special name on it. And so I don't think that's as helpful as if we had true representation. And I was talking to you about this in before we started the show about how, okay, so now we're starting to see more representation, but what about Native Indigenous children mm-hmm. when they go to look for toys? Mm-hmm. You know, there's just...
Well, but what would you say to white families?
About the toys they pick for their children?
Yeah, I mean...
Let kids pick for themselves, mostly. I mean, listen to what kids want. We do so much of, like, forcing things onto kids. Yeah. And we think it's so cute when little girls are pink and frilly and purple or whatever. I don't know. Or little boys have, like, little slugger or something on there. I never really quite understood that. I was once getting a pedicure at somewhere in the mall. And this woman next to me was very visibly pregnant where I could actually know that she was pregnant and not be rude. And so I said, oh, you know, and we didn't find out what children we were having. So I'm never really fond of the, are you having a boy or a girl? But she told me she was having a boy and my little football player. And I wanted to be like, what if he's an artist? Like, that's so specific. Yeah. Like, what if
oh my gosh, if I had a little boy, would I want him to play football?
Right.
I don't think so. Good God.
But there's so many different
paying attention.
Right. There's so many different ways to be people, and especially even with gender diversity, there's so many ways to be a girl or be a boy that it's really unsustainable to kind of have these strict demarcations for toys especially.
Yeah. So even though there are a lot of dangers and pitfalls and socializations that are happening with toys, it's also maybe not a good idea to try to force different ideas through toys? I'm so confused. I'm just going to do everything wrong. I'm going to be the worst mother.
The point is,
play, like what you play.
Right. Yeah. You will mess up your kids no matter what. I pretty much learned that one. but if you're looking for having kids who are whole and vibrant and just like fully themselves and not falling into, and we all fall into gender socialization. Mm-hmm. We still do it. We live in the world, which socializes us. It's not as easy as your parents or whoever. Mm-hmm. It's going on in the whole world, and we're slowly and surely changing that. I mean, I don't know about your question about what exactly to do, but for instance, what I do is, so I'm a little bit neurotic, as you know. You've known me for a while now. And so I have in my closet toys ready to go for when my daughter gets invited to a birthday party. So I don't have to go to the store special.
Wow.
And it is things like magnetic tiles or, you know, very neutral stuff. So it doesn't matter where she goes, or like books or learning toys or, you know, a plant terrarium or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Because I just really find all that other stuff that's so either branded or gendered really kind of obnoxious. So,
you know, that is a challenging thing, buying for kids who aren't your own.
Exactly.
I get really stressed out, especially when it is a little girl, because I don't know if possibly their parents are the type that if I buy them, you know, some sort of go roll in the mud type of, you know.
Or maybe she doesn't
active
like
toy.
To do that. Yeah.
Maybe she doesn't like to do that. Maybe her parents will tell her or will make some comment about how that's not ladylike.
Right.
You know, I don't really know. So my solution has been I have my son
pick out
whatever his favorite thing is to share with them. And he buys girls a lot of Hot Wheels cars. But, you know, it's like he's really excited because it's one of his favorite things and, you know, he wants to share it with them.
Well, so you came to my youngest daughter's birthday party, and I don't know if you picked it out or Felix did, but...
Felix did.
Well, she loved that it was like a model car, but she's always loved cars. She even has her My Little Ponies go...
nice.
Drive like cars. So I think really you just have to be... So, like, with any kind of thing that you do in life, you can't force anyone else's behaviors. And all you can actually do is be...
And Felix doesn't think about it.
Yeah.
You know, if I say pick out a toy for your friend at school, you know, the last birthday party he went to is like, well, I really like art. And he wanted to go to Michael's and buy this little girl a drawing pad and some watercolor paint.
Right.
And I was like, that is the best birthday present ever.
That's awesome.
Because he's four and just thinks of things as being interesting.
Right.
Yeah. He has no idea about socialization, so he completely ignores it. So it becomes the perfect
children's gift shopper as this four-year-old. Yeah.
And another point is Felix has just joined day school. Day school, do you call it that? What do you call
preschool.
It?
Preschool.
Preschool. And, of course, he is being indoctrinated. I'm mixing some words together.
You could probably say both.
And he will be learning
right.
And there, and the some research, very bad things, too,
right.
I
the
expect.
Research does show that by age three, children know their gender and they know their sexuality. So whatever they feel that they want to be, whether it's male, female, or maybe gender neutral, they kind of know that already by three. And a lot of it comes from messages they receive, you know, from their surroundings. So children know their gender.
I had my son, he picked a little clover flower out of the yard and gave it to me and told me, girls like flowers. Oh. And I was like,
which girl do you know? Because I don't.
I was like, do you like flowers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of sitting there going, well, I do like flowers. I mean, I think you have to be pretty full of darkness to not like flowers. But I just, you know, I didn't know what to say. I was like, so do you like flowers? He's like, yeah. I said, but you're not a girl. He said, no.
Right.
And they kind of thought about it, and he didn't really complete the connection there.
But yeah, I was but just you like, put a little nugget in his brain.
People and, like flowers. I mean, don't exclude yourself from enjoying flowers.
Was that before he started school?
No, that was during school.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's also like just coming back to that conversation of just your cultural background and your upbringing as well, what we may be afraid of. Because just in my experience, you know, as an African-American woman, we, some of us, you know, can be very, oh my gosh, if you let this boy be too feminine, he may grow up to be, dare I say it, gay.
Right.
Or,
right.
you
There's
know.
A lot of policing for masculinity. Yeah.
Yeah. And so a lot of what my experience has been is really trying to go towards what we're afraid of. You know, it's like, okay, I don't want you to end up being like this. And I can understand that on, you know, on certain things, but it's like, I don't want you to be this way. So I'm going to try to do my best to force you to be this way. But then I also know a lot of black males who are so hard that it's tough to find their softer side. Mm-hmm. And we see a lot of violence because it's like, well, you are males and this is kind of how you are and you have this brute strength.
And there's a lot of rules about masculinity.
Yes, there are. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of as if there's no room for you to also be feminine. There's no room for you to also, you know, cry and have a more tender side, which you have it. So to try to beat it out of yourself only causes you to be more
I think that's really important to talk about. So a lot of times feminism is really focused on women and girls, but in reality, we all have gender. And so what we really need to remember is that making a world in which women are free to be who they are and to express themselves any which way they want is also making a world in which men get to be who they want to be and who they feel makes them whole and happy.
Well, yes. I mean, I'm raising a boy.
Right.
I don't want him to be emotionally repressed.
Right.
I don't want him to feel like if he enjoys sewing that he's less of a man. I don't want him to I don't want him to feel limited.
Right.
Period. I want him to be able to
just
do
like we
whatever.
Don't want our girls to feel limited.
Right.
Right. We all love our children.
And the thing is especially in children, you really see it with little boys that there is a lot of limitations that we are putting on our little boys. And it is a lot in toys. You know, the whole superhero phenomenon, and there's a lot of four-year-olds that are dressing up as
superheroes.
Four-year-olds
don't look like with the big muscles and the, you know, the
not
over-masculine.
Not only that, but what business does a four-year-old have watching the kind of violence that, I mean, these superhero movies are brutal. I mean, I don't even know that my son's old enough to watch Star Wars, and I love that movie, and it is very tame. But I just don't think he's emotionally ready for violence of any sort.
Could we list the phone number again?
Yeah, we are at 816-931-5534, and I think we could talk about whatever.
I know, we love talking about this. I'm sorry.
When I was growing up in the 70s, toys weren't that big a deal. Right. And toys weren't that big a deal. I mean, we had like our social skills were more important back then because mm-hmm. they started doing integration with kids from different, you know, city and and so that was our socialization and kind of getting to know people.
And weren't toys more like in primary colors like blue, yellow, and red? It wasn't pink
didn't
and
really
blue.
Care. Mm-hmm. Right, no, right. And it's like
blocks. But I'm sure little girls were still. I mean, we had home ec where girls learned sewing, and we had wood shop where the boys. Right.
Yeah,
I'm sure there was still some of that. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it was just, I grew up in a university town, and it was a teacher's college.
Right.
And so it was just like, you know, they started integration and the kids, and so you kind of got to know, be friends, and go to different churches and things in that manner, and dress different, and, you know, I don't think
that was a common experience.
No, that doesn't sound very common.
Oh, really not? No. Well,
it's a good experience.
Was it in the north? Did you grow up in the north? So, you know, I have a friend, Carol, you know, Carol, now in Missouri. She says the north is so far different. Mm-hmm. We are in the deep south here in this area as far as she's concerned.
I agree.
Yeah.
So, it's something just the social skills of kids should be the number one thing.
Oh, exactly. And that's what Amy was getting at. Like, we want our boys and our girls to be emotionally strong and to be able to talk to others and to recognize their own emotions.
And to not be limited.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and have, like, playgrounds where the kids can go play together mm-hmm. and really, like, see being outdoors and kind of working with... just social skills.
Right.
Like saying, because you're wearing a skirt or something in that manner doesn't mean that I...
Yeah, men should be free to wear skirts just like...
Yeah.
We need to pause for a station break, and we will be right back talking about toys and gender. The phone number is 816-931-5534, and we'll be back right after this.
Supporting KKFI, Ensemble Iberica presents The Iberian Poets, Saturday, November 21st at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. Featuring artistic director and guitarist Bo Bledsoe and soprano Victoria Botera, Ensemble Iberica presents the great poets from Spain, Portugal, and the colonial Americas and the music that permeated their artistic lives. That's The Iberian Poets, Saturday, November 21st at 8 p.m. at St. Paul's Episcopal Church at 11 East 40th Street. Advance tickets are available at ensembleiberica.org.
Hundreds of worldwide rallies will call on world leaders at the UN Climate Conference in December to solve our climate crisis. KC area citizens may join the global clarion call at the KC Climate March on November 29 at 2:45 p.m. next to the plaza. At 4:30 p.m., community leaders, including Congressman Cleaver, will speak at All Souls Unitarian Church. See kcclimate.org for details. This message is a public service announcement of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You are invited to the UN campaign to end violence against women and girls. The 16 Days of Activism is from November 25th to December 10th. Wear orange, take action, and call for political commitments to match with meaningful action and adequate resources to end violence against women and girls worldwide. Go to unwomen.org for more information.
All right, and we are back, and that phone number is 816-931-5534, and we're going to move the conversation along into some of the shopping experiences that maybe you can expect during this holiday season and some commentary.
Well, I recently read a New York Times article about that now that Target has decided to, instead of having a boy aisle and a girl aisle, they're just grouping toys together, like all the Legos go in one.
And this is like the pink aisle phenomenon.
Right,
they talk
there was
about.
A pink aisle and a blue aisle, and it was very specific. It was all
and still
blue.
At Toys R Us. I mean, there's
exactly.
a whole...
Exactly, Toys, it's like half of the store is pink.
I think
and half
the floor even
blue.
Has pink tiles
exactly.
in that
oh,
section.
No.
And the,
exactly.
The other section has, you know, every color, because boys are allowed to like all colors and girls like pink.
Right. Now, I wish I would have done this as a little experiment, but I remember the first time I was on the show with you, my mom had recently bought my nephew a doctor's kit because my daughter had one and he loved playing with it so much that she decided she was going to get one of these for my nephew for Christmas. So she went to a specific store. Am I allowed to say it? So she went to Toys R Us And she was looking around and she couldn't find it. You know, it's a big store. It's really kind of confusing. And she finally asked someone, look, I can't find the doctor kit. Where is the doctor kit? And the guy said, oh, it's over there in boys' careers. And I was like, it's 2012 or 13. I can't remember.
And the majority of med students are women.
Right. And so, like, so I was like, okay, for one, why is it in boys' careers? Two, why is there even an aisle called boys' careers? Why isn't it just careers? Like, this doesn't make any sense this is.
Maybe we start a writing campaign.
Maybe. But so I wish I would have gone back and seen now that things have been changing very recently and seen maybe how things have been moved around, because I do know that Target made a statement that they weren't going to be doing this anymore. And there was a lot of outcry, actually, calling it this liberal PC policing kind of thing. And I don't really understand why people get all up in a bunch, because really this pink and blue phenomenon is actually socially very new.
Yeah, I mean, you see advertisements for toys when I was, mm-hmm. even as late as when I was a kid, in the late 80s and early 90s, that you have the Legos, that Legos looked like Legos,
yeah,
and everybody had Legos.
There wasn't a specific pink Lego, right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they had pink Legos, but if they did, it was like just one of the big bucket of colors.
Right.
You know, it was kind of like a crayon box.
Well, there's been a little bit of research into that, and specifically what was found was that manufacturers, I mean, so they want to sell stuff, and the easiest way to sell something is to make a need for two of something. So instead of being able to be like, oh, this will fit for a boy or a girl, to make it very gender specific, and so then you have to buy the girl one or you have to buy the boy one, and then you sell more of something if they're specialized. Mm-hmm. And so that was actually noted. And then what the article I was reading recently in the New York Times was saying, now that there's been like this sea change of how like people are actually requesting gender neutral type of marketing or toy marketing, they're jumping on that bandwagon because they just want to sell you stuff. They really don't really care about like the social commentary part of it. So that's why more people are, or more businesses are starting to, you know, come on this tide of, oh no, everything's gender neutral and we just have the toy aisle and it's not gender.
Well, I mean, I think it's a lot of it too, though, has been led by little boys who feel excluded from things. Last year, where there was a large movement with, I think it was Bobby Flay leading the charge to say,
Who is Bobby Flay?
He's a Food Network star. Yeah. He's a hotshot star. And, complaining that Easy Bake Ovens were pink. I mean, for one thing, too, why is pink so terrifying to boys?
Right, because right.
Yeah.
There's a whole that is.
I have so many problems with what we have done to this color. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But he came out because there were some other little boys who were saying, I like to cook, but I'm really embarrassed to say that I want this Easy Bake Oven. And, you know, Bobby Flay said, I was cooking when I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. I am a professional chef. Mm-hmm. If that's what your passion is, you start when you're that young.
Yeah.
If we don't let boys buy these toys, we're not going to have boys getting to grow up to be master chefs.
But the thing that's so contrary to that is the fact that there are a lot of male chefs. I mean, if you think about the profession, you don't see a lot of women chefs.
Exactly.
There are actually more males that have that role than women. And so to think that
women are cooks.
Yes, or, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, we're the cooks, but not the actual chef. So it's
because
like,
it's a position of power, actually,
well,
and they make a lot of money.
But even with fashion, you know, like there are a lot of men that own and, you know, and run fashion lines. Mm-hmm. So at some point, they were doing something with, you know, fashionable.
That's
but
a really
we
good
still
point.
Have this message of, well, boys and girls should do these things differently, but then you look at the people in our own time frame who are, it's not the same.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And then conversely, you see women who want to be chefs kind of but being told that they don't have what it takes to do that, even though they have centuries of socialization to support that all they should do is cook.
Specifically with the job of chef. So I study gender and occupations, like, you know, I've talked about stuff on this show. But So women are also kept out of being surgeons, and being a surgeon is almost a lot like being a chef, actually. So you have to be really highly skilled, but you have to be able to take really long hours at the job, like standing up, and it's considered just a very hard on the body kind of a job. And women are considered like frail or not tough enough, or actually this work-life balance issue will come in where women are considered not to have what it takes to be able to just stay in the kitchen for, you know, 120 hours a week or in the operating room. So it's really this under the table kind of message about, you know, where women actually belong is with their children. Yeah. And so they don't belong in these really high profile, high demanding jobs where
they don't have as much time with their children.
And to the flip side of that, that men should be willing to work 120 hours and not
be with their families.
To stay at home with their families.
Yeah.
So back to how we navigate, how are we going to navigate without the pink aisle? I mean, I think that once
we
get there.
Are you adrift?
I feel like maybe I wouldn't know what toys boys and girls would appreciate. if I didn't have a color aisle to tell me which one was which.
Amy, can I say this real quick? I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
My husband and I owned a restaurant when he was growing up. So now, or back then, it was like a present to him was like giving that they could go to the restaurant that we owned, or even a pizza joint or something like that. So that was a present to the kids for birthday presents.
Oh,
you
interesting.
Know, and something different. He knew about food, and he's still to this day a good chef, but that's a nice job. But that was a gift.
Right.
And so it's just
like an experience.
Like
experience is this gift.
Oh, that's something.
Making
exactly.
it open and say, let's go do this.
Exactly. So one of my hugest pet peeves is tons of stuff. Like, it drives me crazy just having tons of stuff. And I was actually going to say this when you were talking about giving gifts to other kids. So if you were to go to someone's birthday party where they just so happen to have a family that gives them a lot of girly stuff or a lot of boy stuff, depending on the gender of the kid, and then you feel like you're being the weirdo giving them something different, they're going to get plenty of that anyways. You might as well be the small voice that is something different, right? And so, you know, it's not going to, like, you know, make the gender socialization or the gender structure come crashing down, but it's small ways that you can actively work against that in your daily life.
Well, you know, one thing that Emily used to do a lot when she would come to birthday parties is have the gift be a book.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, if you're concerned about what message you're giving to a child that you have to buy a gift for, a book is never the wrong message.
Yeah, a book is super easy.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's one that we oftentimes forget about. And possibly it's because we have this idea that children don't enjoy to read.
Yeah.
Which is just not true.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of children enjoy reading. Cool. And the children who don't enjoy reading, it's because they haven't found a book that they like to read.
Right. And another thing with, one second. You were talking about the experiences. So, like, it's hard to maybe give, like, experiences to other kids. And sometimes experiences are actually kind of more expensive, like a gift certificate or something. But I've also tried to tell people that are coming to my kids' birthday parties, like, look, it is actually not about presents. It's more about you just coming and us enjoying the time together. And so I'll try to say, look, even something that you already have, like a book you already own that you're willing to share, you know, even gently used books, like, it's really not about presence. And so I try to make it, I think another message we can do about toys and gender socialization is like this idea that kids need a ton of stuff, which you were actually talking about earlier, Ebony. So I think that's important.
I do like, Amy, though, your just comment about allowing your son to make the decision because it is his friend. You know, on most occasions, I would imagine, I don't have children myself, but on most occasions, I would imagine. And so it's like, well, what do you think they would like and something that you would like for them to give? So allowing the child to be included in the decision-making process actually, to me, would take a lot of stress off of the parent.
Right.
And, you know, they may, like, to your son's point, come up with something great.
And I think it helps them to become thoughtful of other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they have to pause and say, well, what would my friend like? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because Felix will often come up with a story of like some moment he had with this one kid as to why they would really like that. I mean, sometimes it's really self-justifying. Like he got my mother a football for her birthday. Had this whole story, like it said KU on it. He's like, well, I love KU and I love mom, so I've got to get her this. And I said, all right. And, you know, I let him buy the gift that he wants to give. And we have a good laugh about that because it was a really cute story.
Yeah.
But at least he's thinking about it.
Sharon and I are from different generations, and she's the oldest and I'm the youngest. And so it's like, I probably got more hand-me-downs from my family. And so it's like when I got something special from my brothers and sisters, or it was just one special thing that my mom and dad picked out, or, well, mostly mom picked out. Mm-hmm. And so it'd be kind of something different than all the hand-me-downs.
Well, and that's interesting because what I notice is when we talk about the gender socialization in toys, there is a big difference between generational experiences here.
Yeah.
And I know that toys got to be severely gendered when I was a kid. I think it was still kind of transitioning into it, but it was definitely, you know, you had to buy a Barbie for your friend for their birthday.
Oh, no, yeah, it was a big deal.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if this was your birthday experience, but you'd have a kid's birthday party, and there would be, like, I don't know, you have 10 kids come to the party.
They'd all bring a Barbie.
There'd be all of these little tiny Barbie-shaped packages piled up over there, and everybody was really excited for, like, what Barbie they were getting. I mean, it was...
Right.
You had at least 8 new Barbies walking away from a birthday party.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was...
Yeah, I think generational stuff is different and probably class too. So I don't really know what differences outside of my own class. But another thing that I've been trying to teach, so this is not necessarily gender, but just about consumption and consumerism as a whole. And maybe this is a good thing to end this show with, but, I'm anti-stuff, like I said before, and I had been going to Target. You know, I go there monthly for shopping or whatever, and my youngest had seen, like, a kitty purse, like a little kitten. It's like a purse made out of a cat. It's kind of... It's like sequins.
That sounds really...
I know it sounds weird, but it's like sequins.
Like Cruella DeVille.
It's like a sequin kitty purse. And we would go, and she'd be like, Mama, I want this. And I'd be like, well, put it on your list, you know. And I'm not one of those parents that I let them buy a toy every trip. Not at all. They never... ever get to buy something at the store. And so we would go for like 5 months, and she would always say, I want, this is what I want. And I said, okay, put it on your list. And so she probably thought this was never going to happen. So I had bought it and put it away and gave it to her on her birthday. And we gave 2 toys on her birthday, just like we give each kid like 2 toys on their birthday, 2 toys on Christmas, because they get plenty from others. And because I had not let her have it, and she'd been wanting it for 5 months, she opened it and she was so quiet. She goes, Mama, I was looking at this. And I was like, I know. And she treasures it. Like, it's like something she wanted and didn't just like, unwrapped it and threw it on the pile. So I think when we're thinking about toys for kids, one, we do need to think about gender socialization and race socialization. It's super important. But we also need to think about socializing them into just having a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I found, too, when you ask kids what they want, you might be surprised.
Oh, exactly.
Because I asked my son what he wanted for Christmas this year. He told me he wants a lemonade stand.
Hey, okay.
And he has all of these plans for this lemonade stand, and it's going to be rainbow colored.
Okay.
He wants to have all the colors on it.
Okay.
And
that would be pretty fun to do.
He wants it to have an awning on top in case some of the people that come are allergic to rain.
Oh, okay, so cool.
So there's all of these like things that kids, sometimes... because my husband and I were having this discussion, like, oh my goodness, what are we thinking? What are we going to do for him for Christmas? We don't know, and blah, blah, blah.
And you just like, ask him. It's actually pretty simple.
Yeah, and then we ask him, and it's like, I would have never got you a rainbow-colored lemonade stand with an awning.
Now, is that something you can build, or don't tell me you can buy those?
Oh, I'm sure you can buy them, but you can build them.
I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to have to find some way, or maybe Santa Claus will bring a lemonade stand. But... you know, those are the things that are really shocking. Like, you know, when I was a little girl, when I was probably 4 years old, when I was asked what I wanted, And I oversimplified when I said I had Barbies and stuff. I mean, I had science kits, and I had dinosaurs, and I had Ninja Turtles and Ghostbusters. Yeah. Like, my parents were pretty good about not trying to tell me I couldn't play with things. But I wanted, like, an Easy Bake Oven and a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
You know what I wanted, and I actually got? I wanted a microscope, and I got it, and a crimper, and I got both of those things.
Yeah,
do and you remember what a crimper is?
No. Yes, yes, it was such a thing. Like
you crimp your hair.
I was going to say, I thought.
No,
I got both of those.
You,
things.
What? You were probably 5 years old, six years
five.
Old.
I was five.
Yeah, because crimped hair was like circa 1990. You weren't anybody unless you had crimped hair.
I wish I could actually get a crimper now. If anyone out there is listening, I would like a crimper for Christmas.
To your point about just kind of valuing what's important, I do notice that with my niece and nephew, certain things, it's like maybe they play with for a little while, and then they totally forget about things. And then there may be certain, like, balls that they like to shoot around in the basketball hoop, which both of them like, the boy and the girl like. But certain things, they have stuff they totally forget about that, and they're like on to the next thing.
Exactly.
So it is important to realize, okay, what do you really want?
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to just us piling up a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and one last thing I'd like to say is if you're going there to buy a toy for a girl and it's like some sort of grotesque distortion of the female body like some sort of weird sex symbol. But
have
it's
you seen
like,
Monster High?
Yes, that's probably what I'm talking about right
Check
now.
Check it out. It's really weird.
I mean, it's like boots that you don't see outside of strip clubs.
And their bodies are actually disjointed. Like, they break apart. Like, on purpose. Like, they're meant to, like, break off. Because it's supposed to be, like, this monster, ghoulish kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But one time I wasn't really paying attention to what Esther, my oldest, was watching, and she had, like, binge-watched Monster High that morning. And she came upstairs saying, "Mama, I need a new face." And I'm like, "What are you talking? No, no more Monster High." And
so, "Mama, I need a new face."
She was like, "I need a new face." And I'm like, "All right, no." So body dysmorphia.
How old is she?
She was, at the time, I think, 6. And I'm so like, "No, we're not watching that anymore." But that's how it starts. You see something and you're like, "I'm not good enough." Like what Ebony was talking about earlier.
Yeah, and I think when you stop to think about it and you're about to buy a hypersexualized thing for a 5-year-old child,
right.
you maybe think twice.
Maybe think twice.
What
that's
is that?
A good
what
advice,
is that?
Amy.
Ask yourself, Amy. You had something.
No, it's Emily's.
Where is
what,
it? She hasn't
how you,
said
how
it.
You can tell if a toy is for a boy or a girl.
Okay, so this is how you can tell if a toy is for a boy or a girl. So do you use it? How does it go, Amy?
You ask yourself. You have to ask yourself if you operate the toy.
Do you operate the toy with your genitals? Then it's not for a child. If you don't operate it with your genitals, it's for either boy or girl, basically.
Yeah.
If you need to operate it with your genitals, it's not for a child. So that's how you know
very
if something's
good.
For a boy
very
or a girl.
Good.
That's the first time I've heard
with that note,
we need to tell you to stay tuned to Urban Connections with Donna Wolf. And guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson?
And our guest today
was Emily Jones.
Thank you.
And we had Ebony Johnson with us, and we have Beth Wilkinson and Sharon Lockhart, and I'm Amy Bell. And join us next week. We'll have fun again.